This is a Pinball News production.
Python was a dear friend, and I'll never forget the first time I had to meet him. It was Pinball Expo. Rob Burke turns to me and says, "He's not here!" And he goes, "Go find him." And I had to go find him.
And then he starts calling.
And he was in this hall, going through a bar mitzvah party or some wedding, looking, going, "I'm Python Angelo. Hi. You know, and this is the bride." I'm like, "No, you need to be down here." And he's like, there was a crane crash. Everything's crazy. He showed up 10, 15 minutes late. Rob's standing up in the front of the thing, just sweating bullets. And then he finally comes in and goes, "Okay, I'm going to keep my talk like a miniskirt, short enough to keep your attention, and just enough to cover the bare essentials." That was Python. And he had it 5 minutes, he was done, and he took all the rest of the questions. And he was a force. The seminar is known as Python, the Man, the Myth, the Insane. And Phoebe brought out a good point. I should have called it the Crazy Cat, because he was a crazy cat. But Python also said that if sanity is genius, then he's truly insane. So to start off Python's little thing, in 2012, we had this little skit just to bring back to Rob how crazy it is to have him and how he keeps missing. Because a year earlier, before we did this, he was this banquet speaker and he disappeared. And they sent me again to go find him with Greg Kamik, which he was down at another party, finding some drinks. It was a crazy night. But this is how we brought 2012 in, and this is probably one of the best beginnings I can talk about Python. And we ran this video because we couldn't find Python. Ha ha ha, maybe.
I found him.
The best way to bring him in a straitjacket on a gurney so he wouldn't hurt anybody. Python was definitely and he loved every minute of that whole skit. He thought it was the greatest thing, the greatest introduction. Yeah. Now I'm going to turn this over. I'm going to ask some questions as we're going to roll through some pictures of Python's life. Of course, this is how he came in.
The mask that he had on his face was...
I know you hate him.
The mask that he had on his face was actually his mask from when he had the radiation chemo in the hospital. They strapped him down, put him in the chemo tunnel or whatever it was, and that was the mask that they put on his, so he didn't move his head.
So we're going to go through a little bit of history here. So let me show you some pictures. We had some other people. Here's Python at a trade show, as always, bending somebody's ear. I love the beard. I did not know he had a beard in one of these, so that was pretty cool. Here is his friends, Mark Ritchie, Brian Hansen. This was the release of Capcom's Magic Pinball. Some of these pictures have never been seen. These were thankfully donated to me after much convincing and prodding and pleading and giving him my firstborn, Jim Shelberg of the Bing Game Journal, released these photos. So thank you, James. But we're going to scroll through these. Here he is with Capcom. You gotta love Mark putting lemon slices or something in his hand, in his eyes. This is an interesting picture. I am in Buffalo, New York. I work for Dave & Buster's, and I do a lot of testing for ice. As we all know that ice, earlier today was John Papaduke we talked about, was going to get into the pinball business. But a lot of the talent from Williams, Capcom, all of these guys, they continued on doing games. Well, ICE, instead of doing that, they were doing Redemption. And this is probably one of Python's and Brian Hansen's games called Pixie Prize. It was a very good game, and ICE, to this day, all the guys at ICE remember Python. I told them that I was coming here to do this little thing, and they were like, oh, the crazy guy, the Romanian. We know who he is, yes, crazy. And he did many games. He did them not just for ICE. This is Baytech. And this is also, this game, I think, was
Chameleon's Paradise.
Chameleon's Paradise. Yeah. Thank you, Roger.
It's okay.
So he had done
a lot. He did Wacky Ducks, too.
He did Wacky Ducks. He found many competition. And he was talking it here. This is the day that I found him wandering through some wedding / bar mitzvah. And, of course, then he met... I told him on the way to the seminar, says he was all nerved up. I says, listen, when the seminar is done, we'll find you a nice Amazonian woman and some cognac. And he says, who? I said, Phoebe. He says, deal. That was it. That was all I had to say. Python was just a man. And, of course, Phoebe always got into the act with Python. In fact, Phoebe, you want to tell us a little bit about the artwork on your face?
Yeah, who did Python, that? Python actually did the makeup, and he had to put the spots all over my body where he could reach. But he came up to our room and did that before the banquet. I don't like these things.
Okay. And, of course, after the banquet, I got into the act. That tail was very wet after Python had bit it. That's what I'm going crazy about. Everybody else always asks me, I don't know what David was doing, but we know what Python was doing. After that, he went in to the expo hall, and he decided to play some flipper football, some Bride of Pinbot. And I tell you, I think to this day, he was playing against some other people in a competition. Coy. And Coy was doing so good that he just literally slapped Coy on the ass as hard as possible. And Coy just stood up like this. And he was like, like just like shocked out of his mind that, you know, somebody just wailed on him. And then
Coy didn't know he was behind him.
Yeah, Coy did not.
Coy was playing Bride of Pinbot, and he had no idea that Python was behind him watching him. And he got the jackpot or.
The jackpot,
And Python just whack!
Coy just. He didn't know what to do. He did not know what to do. And then Python gave him a big hug. And that was an expo moment. This whole night, he just went around, and he was just electrifying. And this was also the night he was inducted into the Pinball Hall of Fame. And, of course, this was Rob. Please, I need you to come speak at expo. And Phoebe's like...
This was the first time I ever met Python. This was in 2006.
And he was having his cognac.
Yes,
and
he was
going through his pictures, and everybody talks about this wild night. He was in the bar, wasn't he? He didn't even make it into anywhere. He just showed up at the bar.
Yeah, he was in the bar.
Getting medicine.
Yes, getting medicine, as Roger would say.
Self-medicating.
And he was signing stuff. And that's his artwork. Him is proud with his artwork at that time. Before we continue on with more of these pictures, I want to turn it over to Greg Ferris, who's a good friend, who also... did some work with Python. You worked with Python. How many years?
Well, it depends on how you count the years. Is this working properly? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So, like, you know, David asked me to share some stories, so I got to be careful. So there's a theme, though, here. Where's Python? Right? It's like, where's Waldo? So... My very first day at Williams, I came over from Bally, and sorry if you've heard this story before, but I like it. I got to Williams, and within, I think, 2 hours, Ken Fidesna, our general manager, found me and said, Greg, I hate to say this, but I need a favor of you, even though it's your first day here. I can't find Python. Well, I didn't know how many times I was going to hear that phrase going forward in my stint at Williams. And I said, well, what do you need? He goes, we need the topper for Taxi. He was going to give me the art for the decal on that, and I can't find him. So we need to get that done, like, tonight, because he was supposed to have it at the printer, like, 3 days ago.
So I said, all right, I'll take care of it. So on my first day at Williams, I diligently went home that night and completed the topper art decal for Taxi and handed it in, and the rest was history. But like I said, if I had a nickel for every time I heard "Where's Python?" or "We can't find Python," that was kind of a running thread throughout my career at Williams. The other thing I did want to say, though, was some of the stuff I saw Python do that wasn't even associated with any games that you've seen was things like artwork on a wall. We had a recording studio at Williams, and it was up in this little alcove area. And I went up there on probably my second day at Williams, and there was this gorgeous mural on the wall that was pencil. And it was this like a male character playing a guitar that was a female character, you know, and it was just insane, but beautiful. I mean, really well rendered, and it was amazing. And I was like, wow, where'd that come from? And Steve Ritchie was like, oh, Python did that the other night when he was hanging around. We were like playing guitars and jamming and stuff, and Python was just like drawing while we were jamming. I was like, wow, that's cool. And other times I'd, you know, come in on a Monday morning, and Python had been working all weekend to meet a deadline, and one day there was this giant piece of paper hanging on his wall, and it was a self-portrait of him, kind of like that picture that you saw with the monkey. That's what that just reminded me of. It was this amazing gesture sketch, just like where you could tell he was using his whole arm to get this sketch done. And it was just to get, he told me later, it was just to get his frustrations out. They are driving me crazy here, Maguch. All these deadlines, I can't stand it. So I had to take it out with a pencil, you know. And he would just get like that. And again, that piece was beautiful, you know, from an artistic standpoint. And then one last thing. Him and Pat McMahon became fast friends. You know, they had something in common. And they would go out and, you know, ideate and come up with ideas for Fishtails. And you know, it was a great combination of minds. And one day, Pat came in, and he had this sketch from Python hanging on his wall. And it was a portrait of Pat while Pat was sitting at the bar, you know, having his beer. And again, the beauty of that sketch, the detail and the ability for someone to capture a guy's personality with a pencil, you know, was just incredible. And that was just him sitting at a bar doing a sketch. So, you know, those type of things that you've never seen on a game, and that stuff just moved me to, like, think, wow, you know, I wish we could get more of this on the games, you know. But for whatever reason, you know, he kind of did what he did on the games. But that's where the genius came out, is just seeing what a pure artist he really was.
And if I'm not mistaken, he always strived for that deadline to be, like, it's due today at 12. At 11 o'clock, he started working on the artwork. Just because it had to be done, but, you know, and he could have had all, you know, 6 months, but he would disappear. And I always heard this story. This is the myth that Python was actually on safari with National Geographic. Is that correct? Do I remember that? He was like
one of the many stories.
One of the many stories.
I mean, either that, training the Israeli army.
Training the Israeli army. Yes, yes, exactly.
No, please.
All right, Phoebe, you got something?
Well, Greg was talking about how he would sit at the bar and do that. And that picture, the first time I met him, it was at the Wyndham. And people were coming up to him at the bar. And he took, I think it was Ron Schuster's shirt. And he drew on Ron Schuster's shirt a picture of the bride.
He's got it. Right?
Yeah, there it is. Come up here. But he drew a picture of the bride, and the only thing that was shown was her legs, and the rest of her was down in his pants. And that was just Ron came up to him and asked him to sign something, and that's what he did. You want me to hold it up, Dave?
Do you want to model it?
No.
Roger, you were this licensing guy. He always was asking for some great licenses, and he loved when you got him Bugs Bunny. Do you have any other licensing ones that he was just going crazy to get? And
yeah, there's a few stories. I mean, I'll backtrack for a second. I think that what's most remarkable about Python is the gift that he gave to all of us. Greg was saying, you know, the mastery of his art and his craft was really exceptional. And he had somebody that was slightly deranged. And I think that that mindset allowed him to be as creative as he was. I had an opportunity, just as an aside. A few years back, Python had a gallery showing in Chicago. And I'd seen a lot of Python stuff over the years. We actually went back to around 1978, 79, when Python first started in the industry. So I knew him from the very beginning. I just knew him to be this kind of colorful, crazy, impetuous person. But going into the gallery was just eye-opening. I went with my wife. You know, Python was there with, I guess, the gal who was his agent. And you went and saw each of the pieces of art that he had done. And to Greg's point, I mean, the artistry of it, the detailing, and some of it was Python's typical bizarre way of combining, let's take this human being and turn them into a bird. Let's take this bird and turn it into a human being. And
I have those pictures on my laptop.
Yeah, I mean, any of that, but that.
The giraffe.
Right, those are the things that are more true to life. I mean, the other things are just fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it was like beyond belief. You just stood there and looked at each one, and there was some nuance, some subtlety, some something in shape, form that he had done. And it was great. In terms of licensing, yes. One of the first projects, 1989, would have been both John Trudeau and Python specifically wanting Bugs Bunny. And it was interesting because it was time for Bugs Bunny's birthday. So the thing that we wound up doing, I wound up contacting Warner Brothers. There was a licensing meeting for current as well as pending licensees. And I went out to Arizona for this event. It kind of blew me away. And we reached an agreement that it was going to be, as it turned out to be, Bugs Bunny's birthday bash. It wasn't the greatest game in the world. I know a lot of people probably have mixed feelings about it as a playing game. Dr. Flash turned that game around in, I don't know, 6 weeks or something. It was insane. The deadlines were crazy. But one of the things that came out of it was, with Gary. One of the things that came out of it was a trip out to California to Warner Brothers for approvals on the artwork. And it was John, Python, and myself, and it was kind of like, I wanted Python to behave himself. I mean, it's the best way to describe it. I knew that John would be cool.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
No, it's okay.
Python behaving himself.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes you needed to be a short leash if he was going to go off to meet human beings. So, you know, this is our first foray with Warner Brothers. And Python had done some really remarkable stuff. John, and if he ever talks about it, anybody asks him, was truly a Bugs Bunny, you know, Looney Tunes person. I mean, he knew all the stuff. Well, we're in showing the artwork. And one of the elements within the artwork, and it is in the artwork if you take a look at it, was Mrs. Tasmanian Devil. Now everybody's in, we're in this meeting room and whatever else, and they're coming in, and Python's kind of jazzed, and it's like, all right, relax. So it's all good. And John is kind of taking him through what the playfield layout was and some of the features of what we wanted to do with the birthday cake and some of the other things. And one of the gals was looking at it and said, "Who's that?" And Python immediately stood up and said, "That's Mrs. Pison, Tasmanian Devil." And John, being John, and being, as I said, the Looney Tunes person that he was, said, "Yeah, that was like comic book number 6, season number." I mean, he kind of detailed it all, and she appeared in a single panel. And two other people came in from Brand Assurance, from Warner Brothers, to look at it, because there was this, obviously, this dispute. And sure enough, when they looked at it, I was like, "Oh, yeah." They were just getting ready at that point in time to reintroduce the Tasmanian Devil back into whatever cartoons and some other merchandise and things. And by the way, they were going to be featuring his wife. And again, I'll excuse the Italian expression, but she had a schmata on, which is kind of like a rag thing with dots. That was in the artwork, and it was absolutely, totally correct. So Python was able to make it all happen along with Jen. Yeah. So just one story.
It's a great, it's a fine story.
I can go with more. But
I'm sure you can. Well, I have to say one thing, too, is that about 3 or 4 years ago, Clay Harold and I were over at James Lofton's booth, and we started going through some archive files, and we came across a title, a license that never came out. It was called Madonna.
I was waiting for that one.
Oh, I knew you were waiting. You were waiting for me to put you on the spot about it, because I'm sure he was going out trying for you, because she had just released a book, I think it was called...
Yeah, she did.
Your coffee table book.
Yep, your coffee table, Sex.
Yep.
And
Python had a particular image. I made contact with...
If you look in the back, Pin Game Journals, Clay made sure it was in there, so you can see it. It's edited out for, children content, but you can see what we're talking about.
Yeah, Python was on the edge at that point in time, which wasn't unusual, but he really had a feel for the fact that, Madonna would work. Germany was a very big market for us, tended to be much more adult-driven. We were looking at doing some things at that point in time, and I forget precisely what the year was, but it was like, we can go off on the edge. In fact, Joe Dillon at one point was talking about doing two different types of artwork, if you remember, one being PG and one being not so PG for Europe in terms of trying to boost sales. And Python just got it into his head that we have to do Madonna, and he started doing sketches and started doing some other stuff.
He even innovated on that one sketch that I could see, that he actually designed the back glass to actually flip 4 times to show 4 different panels of back glasses. So he had designed it like, you see the trucks now rolling around, they flip or the screen changes. He was doing this back, what was that, circa 93, 91?
Yeah, probably about 91, 92, yeah. Somewhere in there. The spread eagle shot of her obviously was... quintessential Python with her kind of sprawl.
On the coffee table.
So yes.
Or on the pinball
machine. So we flew out to New York. Python did not go. It's myself. I think it was Ken Fidesz, the general manager, that went out with me. We met with her attorney to try to propose a unique opportunity with Python's artwork. And we took another piece of artwork. I was very insistent with Python, saying, "Look, I need something a little bit different than just her being, spread eagle. We need something that's going to be a little bit more potentially acceptable if they like the concept. We can always go that way." But never got really any further with it. It wasn't financial or anything else. It was just something that they didn't have an interest in back then.
Okay. All right, we're running out of time, and for us, because we also have the announcement, which I'm going to bring James up in a second. We're going to show you some pictures. Here is Python with Lolita. Now, you know where I'm going with this. Python as the ringmaster.
That was Python's dream.
Python. So you can see where he's going with this, and we do have one last thing, thanks to Jim Shelberg again. It's a small clip. And then we're going to turn this over to James Lofton and my dear friend, my names are escaping me right now. So you know that's Python, for sure. Okay, James, come on up here.
Wait.
Paul Phoebe has something.
Oh, Phoebe, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I felt privileged to have known Python and considered him a friend. And I think the world's lost an amazing spirit. And if you were lucky enough to be in Python's world, you understand what I mean. And we'll miss him.
We will all miss him. We will all miss him.
Hello, James.
He touched many of our lives, and I remember many nights, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, getting my phone starting to ring, and my wife looked at me, who's calling you at this late hour? It's Python. She goes, I'll see you in the morning.
He was only calling you, he was calling you at 10 o'clock? It was like 11:30, 12:30.
Well, he was waiting for Larry to go to bed. You understand? He was waiting for Larry to go to bed. Okay, James, Paul, we're going to turn this over to you, because we know you have some very important stuff.
Hi, I'm James, and this is Paul Kiefer. And this is the point where the speaker goes, can y'all hear me back there? Okay, very good. I've been in the pinball business for almost 30 years, and I am absolutely privileged and blessed to get to know a large number of people. And about 4 years ago is the first time I ever met Python.
It was with the Madonna drawing.
Yeah, and it actually was with the Madonna drawing. I asked him to sign it, and typical Python, he was not sober. And, and all he kept saying was, I was getting him. He goes, where did you get that? And I told him where it came from, and he goes, that's my bitch. What are you doing with my bitch? And, but he eventually signed it. One signature was pretty clean. The other one sort of showed the effects of his state of mind at the time. So,
in Python's defense, at that point, he had actually quit drinking and smoking. And when he got here, he was getting ready to do his speech, and he was very nervous, and people kept buying him triples. And at one point, somebody came up and gave him some Jack Daniels, and I'm like, come on, back for me.
So, meeting Python was really eventful. And the following year is when he was, this would have been 2011. And it just so happened to be the year that the straight jacket and he was carried, you know, wheeled in. And there are events in everybody's life that permanently change the direction they go. Sometimes you don't know what it is, you don't realize it happened, but in this case, looking, I know what it was, and I know how it happened, and it was just one small event that took place, and without it, the next 3 years wouldn't have, or 2 years would not have taken place. So in, So in 2012, of course, being a vendor at the show since 2003, being a vendor, we don't get a chance to really see the seminars. It's primarily man the booth, and that's pretty much it. Well, for some reason, and I forget why, it might have been to get rid of some pizza or something that night or whatever, I went up to the room, and on the way back in, down through the lobby, there was Python checking into the hotel. And I'm walking by, and he goes, hey, James. I say, hey, Python. He goes, you're coming to our seminar tomorrow morning, me and Phoebe. And I didn't even know he was going to be talking. Again, I don't even check the seminar schedule most of the time because I don't get to go to them. And I just said, yeah, I'll go. And I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Way too early for
Yeah, a little bit early for Python. Python, we'll get into that a little bit later. So I'm walking, and he says, yeah, you're going to come. And I says, yeah, I'll come. So the next morning, I'm down in the vendor hall, and I look at my watch, and it's after 10. And I was like, oh, crap, that's right. I told Python I would come down to the seminar. So I ran in, and at that moment, he said, and circus will be done. Pinball circus will be done. And I went, oh, wow, I didn't even know that that was in consideration. So after the speech, the seminar, I went up to him and I told him that I had the original tooling for the ramps of Pinball Circus, and that I also had some of the engineer drawings, like the wire forms, the plastic ramps, and various other engineer drawings, and he was just elated. He couldn't believe. He said, oh, wow, you know, a typical Python. He went, oh, that's worth $60,000 worth of my effort. And he went on. And so I gave him my phone number. And a couple of weeks later, he calls me. And while I'm talking to him, I said, Python, hold on. You know, I've got these tubes that I rescued, another story altogether, from this place in what I call Blooming Idiot Town, Illinois. And they had circus written on the tubes, and I never looked at them. And I always assumed that it was Circus Voltaire. So while he was on the phone, I said, just out of curiosity, I'll go look at these tubes. And I went, opened up the tubes, and inside there was all the original films for the artwork of Pinball Circus. And he literally cried because he could not believe that that stuff had survived. And so from that point, he was just, I gotta, yeah, that's gonna be just fantastic. So he made arrangements to come down and pick them up because we didn't want to ship them. We didn't want to have FedEx or UPS do their typical damage or where are they. I think everybody's experienced that from one or the other. So he came down for the weekend, and he cooked us dinner. He was a fantastic cook. And what I remember was he was making stuffed mushrooms, and I don't like stuffed mushrooms. And he goes, I know why you don't like them. I'm going to fix them. You're going to love them. So he fixes them, and I'm thinking after he's done, oh, I got a stomach eating a couple of these things. Oh, God, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle this? And I pick one up, and I eat it, and it was the most fantastic thing I had eaten in years. This thing was absolutely delicious. And he knew what it was that I didn't like about him, and he fixed it. But he was an incredible chef.
It's funny, all three of us here, Phoebe's looking at her notes, and she showed me, he was also a great cook. I would say he designed dinners like he designed everything else in his life. And of course, it was just like you were talking the deadlines. He'd start about maybe 7 o'clock at night, going, "Okay, I'm going to get ready, and we're going to get ready for dinner." I think almost every night it was like 2 a.m. by the time we actually ate dinner.
That was the early dinners.
Yeah. When we were traveling with Python or visiting with him, I don't think I went to bed before the sun was up.
Nope.
And we were up 4 hours later again. Python was just a machine, it seemed.
After dark.
And one of the scariest things that ever happened to me was I had to cook for him once. And so,
you're not doing it right.
Well, that's what I was afraid. He would always go, "You're not doing it right. You know, look, just listen to me." And so I decided that I was going to cook what he had always cooked for us, some egg whites with a little olive oil and some feta cheese. And I'm sure my hand was probably shaking when I gave it to him. And because he would not sugarcoat it. If he didn't like it, I was sure I was going to hear about it. But luckily, I wiped my brow and everything was good after that.
We went up to the farm in Michigan and spent a couple days with him before Expo one year. And he came back from getting salmon. He brought these salmon back. They were huge. and needless to say, I know more about filleting salmon than I ever really needed or wanted to know, from getting the caviar to filleting them and doing everything else with them. But he came back from getting the salmon, and he had this thing. He had it all wrapped up like a baby. And I was like, what on earth are you doing? And he says, I'm going to cook you a mushroom. And he had this mushroom. It was a puff mushroom. It was about as big around as a basketball. And he said, I was on my way back, and I saw these turkeys out in the field, and I knew what it was. So I got out, and I chased the turkeys away from it so I could bring it back and cook it for you. And it was, he sliced this mushroom, and it was about as big around as a dinner plate, sliced it and cooked it in the skillet with butter and several different kinds of cheese, Parmesan, all this stuff, and he had the spice that he put on it. And it melted in your mouth. It was yummy. And the guys that were with us, they weren't real keen on eating mushrooms. They were afraid they were going to die because he got this mushroom out of a field after he sold them the turkeys. But it was great.
So anyway, that moment going through the lobby, if I had not been walking through the lobby at that exact moment, then the next 2 years leading up to today would not have happened. And the last 2 years with Python forever changed my life. He changed everybody's life that got to know him. I've made the comment, people make the comment that no two people read the same book. And I don't think there's any two people that know the same Python. He is different in everybody's eyes. Yeah, some of the peculiarities of him, yeah, they're the same, but he treated everybody a little bit different. And I got to know a lot about his personal side, and it was quite revealing. The way I put it is he was my dearest friend for these last 2 years, but he was also my most trying friend. There were days where you're just
like a tag team. If one of us has had enough, we just kind of, okay, I'm going to go walk away for half an hour.
Yeah.
And cool off, but go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, no worries. So the 2 years was, he was wanting, of course, to do the circus. So we started working on it, and he met Paul through a pinball party that we had while he was visiting that weekend. And he meets Paul, and he asks Paul if he wants to be involved, and Al Warner as well. And he invited us to his house in Michigan. So we went up there, and then it just sort of started from there, and we continued just supposedly working on it. And working with Python was, come up to Chicago. We're gonna start working on it. We're gonna go 24/7. We're gonna be working on it night and day.
You need to move here. Tell your wife you need to move here.
So so we'd go up there. We'd plan 3 days. 3 days consisted of he'd get up at 11 or 12, and then about 1 o'clock he'd say, "Well, you need to go to the hardware store, or someplace." And by 6 o'clock, we were actually leaving to go to the hardware store.
Well, it was a Sunday, and everything had already closed at 6 o'clock.
So the 3 days. We were supposed to be working. We didn't work. So he goes, y'all need to schedule more time. That's not enough time. You need to come up. So we would schedule 5-6 days at a time. Pretty much the same results. Paul would drive him over to Michigan, over to the cabin over there.
Chauffeur Ivan. Python had a chauffeur. He had a wide collection of hats. And he'd always, there was last year, I don't know how many different hats he wore while he was here. And he had a chauffeur hat. So, of course, when I was driving him around Chicago and Lawrence, I was wearing the chauffeur hat the whole time. Driving Mr.
And he's also now called the Powder Man, which is something that I'll let him explain if he would like.
That's between me and Python.
So we started really working on the circus at the beginning of this year. So we went a year just going back and not a year going back and forth. Late last year, we were going up to Pythons, coming back, and really nothing was getting accomplished. We had a dinner slash meeting with Mark Ritchie, Eugene Jarvis. He was trying to assemble a team that he wanted to work on the circus. And, yeah, he called it his dream team. I don't know why it's a dream team if Paul and I are involved, but
it's since, a ragtag team.
Yeah, yeah, it's very ragtag. But, of course, I was involved because it's sort of like the kid with the bat and the balls. I had the bat and the balls, and so he wanted me to show up with him. So with the drawings and the tooling, well, his health, his cancer came back in October.
Well, this time last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, this time last year. It was shortly after that he went through radiation. So we didn't know it, but he knew it, that they had given him 6 months. And we didn't know that until later. He was trying to mask it. When we got up there, he'd say, "It's a miracle. I've beat it twice." And he would continue to say that. But we started working on the game, actually, in earnest, going into January of this year. And then on January 22nd, I was at his place. And, again, we were supposed to be working on circus. Paul wasn't there this trip. I was up there. And I woke up one morning, and Python is sitting in his kitchen on a stool, just totally catatonic and out of it. And he goes, "James, I'm tired." And so I was just, "Oh, good gracious, this is the end." So he says, "I'm tired." I said, "Well, let's get you to your room, and we'll lay you down." So I picked him up and started walking him down the short hallway, and it took literally 1 hour to go approximately 15 feet. And what had happened was, once I got far enough away from the stool, I was holding him up, and if I had let him go, he'd, of course, collapse. So we're going 1 inch at a time. And I finally got close enough to his office chair, which was on wheels, and I pulled it over, got him to sit down, and then called his sister and called an ambulance, and they came and got him and took him to the hospital. I had to leave that day to get back to Atlanta, so I left right after the ambulance took him, and I felt bad because here he's going to the hospital, and I didn't know if that was the end or not. But I called Phoebe, let her know what was going on, and talked to Paul, told him what was going on. And at that time, Paul decided, well, we've got to show him something to let him know that this circus is getting done.
We had already cut the play fields, and they were in the process of being clear-coated. And so I called Charlie from Spooky Pinball, who was helping us get these done, and he's about 2.5 hours from Chicago. And I said, "Charlie, can you accelerate this a little?" And Charlie and Ben Heck from Spooky drove down on a Friday, brought the playfields with them. And there's a photo of us, all of us in the hospital with Python holding these whitewoods.
And a video.
A not for work, not safe for work video.
Well, let's see. Are there any children in here? Raise your hand. Anybody under 18?
Let's just say he licked the playfield and he described it in great detail on what it might taste like. All right. So that same day, he was also discharged from the hospital and went home. And as I'm sitting there, James had went to his apartment to prepare it to get the hospital bed delivered.
Yeah, they released him. When he went into the hospital, he was completely out of it. And what they discovered was he had quit taking one of his medications. I believe it was steroids. So he had a withdrawal from that, and they corrected his medicine, and he started getting better. And there were some events that took place over the following week that really brought him back around, and it brought him back to life. And the first one was when Roger Sharp went and visited him in the hospital. Roger had emailed me and told me how bad he was and how bad he felt that, you know, he was just tore up that Python was in that condition. But little did he know that that visit energized him. Yeah. And then,
that was when I contacted Mark Hoff, Walter Day, the trading card, and they were doing a trading card of Python. And I had contacted Mark and told him, you know, if you had this ready, it would really, really cheer him up.